I went to a choir concert last night. So my middle kid's in choir.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was going to ask you.
Which you will probably hate me saying that, but yeah.
I was going to ask you to elaborate on that one.
He needed an elective, you know?
Yeah.
And so, you know, choir, they're split into like three different groups based on their skill level. And it was actually really good. I will say that, like, I haven't been to a choir concert in a really long time. It was actually really, really enjoyable to like sit and listen to them. But they're all
different with your kid.
For sure. Yeah. Yeah. They're all up there and they've got like the robes, you know what I mean? And robes,
yeah.
They're like on this stage and there's, you know, it's in the auditorium. There's a bunch of people there. I'll bet you there were 500 people there anyway. Seats are all blocked in, but they got all the spotlights and just like all the kids up there just like squirming under the heat. You know, you could just see them like they're already nervous because they have to sing in front
of
people.
Absolutely. And then they're getting flushed.
And then they're getting flushed. Yeah. You could just see it wash over a bunch of them. And I kept thinking like one of these kids is going to pass out. That's what I kept thinking.
I would have.
I should ask my wife. She did choir. I was like, did anybody ever like lock out and pass out? It has to have happened.
Has to. Anyway, I would think so.
Yeah. That was a fun night. What are you up to? You're all camoed out today.
You know, just duck hunting.
You went out last weekend?
Opening day was Saturday.
Okay.
And then I was duck hunting this morning.
And how'd it go Saturday?
Phenomenal.
Did you go Saturday and Sunday?
No.
Just Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It was good?
Phenomenal.
Better than expected? Or yes. About what you expected?
Opening day is always, it's always good because there's just so many people shooting and the birds.
It's
like,
opening day?
Yeah. And mm-hmm. there's so, you know, it's like, the birds can't go raft up somewhere and chill for the day. Like there's just so many people out. So, you know, there's always birds in the air, but we were six man by like 8:30 in the morning, maybe even earlier.
You were limited out.
Yeah. Like so early. So it was really good. It was on fire.
It's a lot of shooting.
It was a lot of shooting.
Did you miss any?
So yeah, of course.
Is it coming back though?
Yeah. This morning too. Like, so on opening day on Saturday, like I've been out of shooting a shotgun for a long time and it's just different.
Mm-hmm.
And we talked about this about like shooting animals walking with a bow. There's just something about, maybe it is because of all my years and all the birds I've shot, mm-hmm. like all the duck hunting I've done, of just the lead is so natural.
Yep.
That like my lead and all that was really good, but my target acquisition was so slow on Saturday. Like I noticed I was super rusty because, you know, the whole thing is you want to shoulder the gun mm-hmm. and you want your BB to be like pretty close to where you want it to be. Like it kind of falls into that window of where the bird's going to be. And I kept having to like find my BB and try to like get it back and swing it in. But then I would lead them and shoot good. I had a couple that I shot like really bad, but that, I mean, it's been so long that happens, but today
you're on it.
It's like, it got me back in the saddle on Saturday and today. Ooh, buddy.
That's awesome.
I had a couple shots this morning that were just like, ooh.
Yeah. And so that in itself is fun, right? Like to make a good shot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was fun.
I think that time that Brady and I went to Kansas and we shot snow geese and, Canada's, is that right?
Yeah. Well, Canadians? Were they graders, lessers?
They were all graders, I'm sure.
Yeah, I'm sure. Where you guys were, they were all graders.
Yeah.
For sure.
Anyway, into that trip, I think we went 3 days, and I couldn't honestly, in my heart of hearts, say that there was one bird that I hit.
it's just different.
Oh yeah.
I mean, you're fluid and like that you don't pick a spot. Like it's just so fluid and mm-hmm. you're trying to match your barrel swing speed with the speed of the bird moving. It's like, it's so fluid. You can't just shoot a spot.
I remember there was one time there was like a lone bird coming in and we were all, you know, tucked away in the blind and everything. And I don't remember who it was. They were like, Brady, this one's you, bud. This is you. Get ready. And I was like, thank God.
They chose Brady.
Yeah. I was like, thank God. Because there's no chance I would have hit that one. And then I'd have never lived it down. But it was fun. It is different skill. But way
super
fun.
Different. But today it came back. Like now I'm confident. And again, mm-hmm. leaving Saturday, I'm like, man, I'm so rusty. I need to like go shoot clays or go do something to get back into it. Man, today I was freaking on it today.
What were most of the birds?
It's super early season right now. I'm mm-hmm. actually like pretty surprised. It's especially today. I'm surprised today we shot our limits, but right now it's primarily green-winged teal.
Okay.
We're down in the desert. Mm-hmm. They're always kind of the first to show up. Widgeon, pintail.
Gotcha. Did you kill some Bannon birds, I heard?
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, and we shot two bands on opener.
Do you got a tether that you're going to pile them up on?
Yeah.
Do you have one from like back when you used to do it?
That one got stolen.
Oh, really?
Kind of a, yeah.
No way. Yeah, out of your truck or what?
Lost in the shuffle back in the day. I had one that
somebody
was
that?
Pretty loaded up.
They have all your calls and everything on it?
Everything.
And they just grabbed it?
Yeah.
Dang.
Guns, decoys.
No way.
Yeah, back in the old days. That was a pretty good, that one, I was working on that one for a while all through my college years and a couple years out of college. But yeah, starting a new one. Got the first band on it.
That's awesome.
Yeah, we shot two bands, which was really cool. A banded hen redhead and then a banded hen mallard or hen pintail.
Gotcha.
No mallards.
No mallards.
Not yet.
When do they start rolling through?
I mean, so weather dependent.
Really?
I would guess like mid-November, Thanksgiving, gotcha. Somewhere in there. But it's so weather dependent.
Yeah. It's been cool down here. It's cool today.
It was cold.
Rainy, windy.
That's why we hunted this morning.
Yeah. As I was driving down today, I was looking at the news. You know, don't come at me for, I read the news on the way down. It's a long straight drive. Anyway, record year in Salt Lake for the month of October for those weather stations. Most recorded like moisture, rainfall in 150 years that they've been recording.
They say it's a wild winter
this
year.
Which is crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. I hope it doesn't get too wild.
I know, me too.
Yeah.
I don't want everything frozen.
What time did you get up this morning?
2:45.
No way.
Yeah. I'm just rolling. I'm rolling on adrenaline.
What time
now.
Are you going to go to bed tonight?
I mean, 8? Shit, my oldest kid doesn't go to bed before 10 p.m. So.
Oh, man. That's brutal.
Got hockey tonight.
You
got all kinds of stuff. Homework.
You
got
to have a different level of dedication to be a bird hunter.
I will say I am slightly nervous because the last time I bird hunted, I got to 265. And not the right kind of 265.
Yeah, because you're hitting gas stations.
And you're just so sleep deprived. Mm-hmm. You're chasing birds everywhere. You know, when they show up, they show up. And if it's 2 days in a row, if it's 5 days in a row, if it's 1 day in a row, you know, whatever it is. And then you're like back on the road. Mm-hmm. It's a lot. Birds travel.
Yeah, you're not getting out of bed at 2:45 and making yourself a good breakfast or anything like that. You're grabbing...
Bro, I hit the gas station.
Donuts at the gas station.
No, I didn't do the donut
no
today.
No donuts?
I might come to that later on in the season.
I recommend the raspberry fritter at Maverick.
Saturday, Sunday, Monday. I'm 4 days into the season, and I'm already hitting the Jimmy Dean reheat sandwiches at the gas station as I got this morning.
Love that.
I'm a little nervous.
That's a vibe, though.
I'm a little nervous.
What are you hunting out of? Are you blind?
Today we were just tucked in the reeds on marsh stools.
Just took your stool?
Yeah, Saturday we were out of a boat. Today we were just on marsh stools.
How's the duck wagon working out?
So sick.
It's nice.
So sick.
How's Camo doing?
He's young. So I'm like, he's young though.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to ruin him. And he's everything's good. Like right now, retrieving and like all the drill work and everything is fun to him.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to introduce it as work yet.
Did he retrieve any?
No, I haven't taken him
out yet. Okay, didn't get
out,
yeah. Yep.
I don't want him to
slow roll.
Not like it. It's like a kid.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? I actually compare it to my kids all the time. I don't want them to not like it. So I want to pick and choose when he goes. And I want it to be really calm, really nice, a lot of birds, like no stress. I want it to just be fun.
Yep.
And right now, early season's just, there's a lot of work involved in early season birds.
Did you have some dogs with you?
Yeah.
Labs are good dogs.
Yellow lab.
Yeah, those are fun
and
to watch
she
work,
is
man.
So good. It's made me. This is a new.
Now
new
you
decision.
Wanna, now you want a lab?
No, I want to send Camo to get trained.
Yeah, gotcha.
Because I've been doing it myself, which two kids, business, sports at night, homework. I'm trying my best. I'm like barely keeping my head above water. It's actually, when I think about it, it's almost amazing how good Camo is just with that. But man, watching this bird work or this dog work rather on Saturday and today, like I told John, the guy I'm hunting with, I'm like, you got to send me the dog trainer. I'm sending Camo. I can't do it.
Yeah. When it's you haven't owned a dog in a while, like shit, I don't know. My dog's a complete asshole. I don't know how to train a dog.
Man, it's her name's Ruby and she is so good. She's so impressive.
Right on.
I'm like, if I get half that, like I would be happy, beyond happy. So I'm going to send him off I think I'm going to send him next week and then he'll come back like mid January for the last 2 weeks of waterfowl, which will be perfect.
Yep.
Cause right now he's 10 months old. That's like on the very young side to make a dog work.
Gotcha.
It's on the real young side.
That's cool, man. You sound enthusiastic.
Oh, I'm
beyond.
It seems
like you're having a good time.
Oh, I'm beyond enthusiastic.
Which I think you needed at this stage in the fall.
Man.
I feel like I need that in my life, too. Especially after
this big game season.
Yeah.
Like, it just, the way the stars align, I don't know. But it's, I wanted birds back in my life in such a bad way. And then I finally made a decision that it was going to be this year. Then all the shit that happened with big game. And then...
It started out good. Season started out good.
I'm like off to a roaring start
you're roaring.
On waterfowl.
You're crushing. That's awesome. Well, man, thanks for the update. I was curious. I promise we won't do updates on...
I'm sure not a lot of these big game guys care too much.
We won't do Lorenzo's bird expedition every single week, but I am...
It's going to be a common theme, though. And
I'm sincerely interested.
And I genuinely mean this.
Mm-hmm.
Big game hunters, you're already above the game on what it's going to take to get into waterfowl. Extend your season. It goes clear till the middle of January. It gives you something to do, reason to be out scouting, finding birds, using strategies. So many things are similar to big game. It's wild.
Yeah.
And it's like, why not? You know?
You've almost convinced me.
Why not? You actually live in not a bad spot.
Yeah. I know guys that do it.
Yeah.
Your cousin does it.
All the time.
Yeah, they're out and about. I see them from time to time, seems like.
It's so fun. And I'm telling you, if you just have the slightest bit of big game skill, it translates one for one.
My kid would love it, I know that.
Other than the shooting. Like, the only thing that I can't tell you that translates is the shooting. The shooting is wildly different.
Mm-hmm.
Like, wildly different.
I'd have to get into some skeet.
Yeah.
I have to get a shotgun.
That would help too. You're out there with a rifle.
I can't steal my 12-year-old shotgun all the time.
But yeah,
he's the only one in my house that owns a shotgun as of right now.
Just steal his.
Just steal it. Yeah, he'd be upset.
He probably wants to use it. The scouting, the tactics, the decoy strategies, the weather and how you're hunting the weather, like it all goes hand in hand.
That's cool. Right on. We're 12 minutes in. We're going to hit promo, and then we'll dive into the meat and potatoes. So promo. And I guess I should know, Brady's out again this week, you and I.
Yep.
Brady was hunting mule deer, and I don't know if he got one or didn't get one.
He has not got one yet.
Okay. I was going to say, if he got one, I haven't heard about it yet. And maybe, I mean, it seems to be, with Brady, it might be just as likely that he got one and didn't say anything.
Actually, now that you say that, I'm only saying that because I haven't heard, and
right.
I'm just hoping he respects me enough to tell me if he did kill one.
Yeah.
But with Brady, I would have
thought so too, but then I got to thinking about it the other day, and I thought, you know what? He may have got one, just not said anything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Off to Alaska.
Yeah.
Now.
Yeah. Off to Alaska. So he's up hunting mountain goats. I saw he was in the airport yesterday, mm-hmm. I want to
yep.
say. So,
yesterday.
I think I looked at the calendar. I think he's gone through most of the month. Might be the rest of the month.
All the month.
All the month.
He's on his annual sabbatical.
Yep. So if you're wondering where Brady's at, that's where Brady's at. And we should have real updates when he gets back.
Yeah.
Maybe Lorenzo and I will just disappear and just turn the mic over to him. We'll just say, you're at
I'm
the mic.
I'm going duck hunting.
You're at the mic
come
for the
like,
next 2 weeks.
Come like Thanksgiving.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I'll be. I'll right just on. Be on the road constantly.
Gotcha.
Chasing migrators.
Yep. So that's where Brady's at. Halloween episode. So we still have the Halloween episode that'll be coming up that last week of October. We've got some really good stories, but we're still soliciting stories. So if you got some good, scary, creepy, weird stuff that's happened to you when you've been out in the woods, submit those to us at reachus@gohunt.com. It'll be Lorenzo and I rereading stories.
I look forward to that one, but also don't look forward to that one.
Yeah.
Makes me think.
I know.
You know, we're just a little different.
There's a bunch of them in there where I'm like, it's not like overtly creepy. It's not like the people saw a ghost or an alien or, you know, some sort of satanic ritual going on in the woods. Some of them are just like very realistic things that just happen when you're out in the woods, you know, like maybe being stalked by a lion or a bear or something like that. And I've never had really one of those.
But it puts it in your head.
But at least that's what it did to me last year. Yeah,
it
puts it into perspective. It's like, this might be an actual thing that could happen or has happened. And I just haven't known it. But yeah, there's some of those. There's some weird ones. I don't know. We'll get to it. But anyway, send us your Halloween stories. And then promo code podcast. You can use the promo code podcast if you want to sign up for a Go Hunt Insider membership. If you do that and use the code, we're going to give you $50 back in the Go Hunt gear shop that you can use towards the purchase of any gear that you want in the shop. I was out there today and there's some cool new stuff. We have these brand new, archery targets, like large ones that would save holes in my drywall, either in the basement or my garage. So I was eyeballing those, but we'll have those in the shop. But there's a bunch of other stuff too. So check it out. And like I said, sign up for an insider account and get yourself $50 back in the gear shop. Rest of the podcast. So what happened is I had some free time the other night. I was laying in bed and I got to, and we got opening season for deer coming up this coming Saturday. Yeah. Rifle deer in Utah, general season coming up this coming Saturday, getting ready to take my kid. And like the number of questions and just, he's going to wear me out, like legit wear me out. I took him to school the other day and I was just like, I'm going to have to wear earplugs the entire time because he's just nonstop. He's super excited. But with deer season coming up, I was thinking about some of the stuff that we've done in the past. And I was thinking back to the documentary that you did. And it would have been like the first year you opened.
It was a long time ago.
So I think it was 2014, I want to say. Yeah. 2014 or 2015. And I think if we opened doors in 2013, is that, or 11?
Well, we opened like a product in 2015.
Right.
So it would have been like, we're on our 10 year of like a revenue producing business.
So it would have been like first year probably.
Yeah.
So we did this documentary film called Colorado's Buck.
Colorado's Deer.
Colorado's Deer.
Yeah.
Yeah. You remember it better than
we couldn't name it Colorado Buck because
of Colorado Buck.
Yeah. Yeah.
It would have been better if you'd have called it Colorado Buck and then you'd have dressed up like Colorado Buck.
Back in those days, we were nervous about
you could pull it off with the beard. You just need the blonde hair.
Yeah. I could grow it out and dye it.
But yeah, Colorado's Deer, which was a really good documentary on Brett Ross, who killed this giant buck in Colorado. And I thought, man, I haven't watched that in a really long time, probably since like the first couple of years that it came out. So yeah. I went back and watched it. And then that kind of led me down a rabbit hole. I was sitting at my desk and I was just like thinking about Boone and Crockett Club and, you know, where that came from. And I was looking at some information on Boone and Crockett Club and kind of the history of it. And then I jumped on another article, a couple different articles, one from Outdoor Life in 2020 and then one from Field and Stream, which was 2024. But it was basically biggest mule deer bucks. So top, I think it went through like maybe 10 or 15 biggest typicals and biggest non-typicals. And most of them had like a little bit of a paragraph or a story, some details about it. And then I just went down a rabbit hole and started like Googling it and researching and reading everything I could find about it. And since mule deer season's coming up, rifle hunt, I thought it'd be fun to just cover kind of some stories and details of like the top five typical Boone and Crockett deer ever harvested and then the top five non-typical Boone and Crockett bucks ever harvested, so mule deer bucks. So I thought we would run through those and just include some of the, you know, some of the stories. Some of them don't have like these real illustrious stories. And then some of them, as I was going through and just reading about them, I went further down different rabbit holes on, you know, things like what's the Sagamore Hills Award? And I was like, where's that come from? You know, I've never Googled that.
I want to know what that is.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And then I kept seeing this museum that kept popping up that has a bunch of these heads. And I was like, I don't know anything about that museum or the person that started it. So I thought I'd pull out some of those details. So I thought it'd be fun to run through those today. So I'm going to read stories. And then as we were talking earlier today, you actually have a lot of interesting stories as well.
Yeah.
Like a lot of personal input and just things that relate to some of this stuff.
Yeah.
So without further ado, we'll jump in. So number one typical, 226 and 4/8.
So disgusting.
226 and 4/8 typical.
On 4 points aside.
On a 4 point.
That's so gross to think how big that is.
Mm-hmm. So give us some perspective. Main beam measurement, 28 6/8. This one I think is really interesting. The inside spread, 30 3/8 inch inside spread.
That's so crazy. So crazy. Inside.
And then several of these typical bucks that are in that top 5, 10, some of them have got like 22 inch G. Twos. Big.
That's so crazy.
Really big.
I mean, think about seeing on 4 points, seeing a buck that's 30 wide inside.
Mm-hmm.
How big were the G2s?
That one I didn't pull it out, but I know it was over 20.
I mean, that's crazy. That's like alien
look. Alien big. Yeah. And I would encourage people, and we can try to drop some photos in the podcast, maybe just to give people some reference, but outside spread 38 inches, which is just sick.
38
So this is the Burris buck. It's the largest typical mule deer ever recorded by the Boone and Crockett Club.
Alberta?
Colorado. Mm-hmm. Doug Burris. So non-typical
is Alberta.
Yeah. Yep. The broader buck. Yep. So harvested by Doug Burris Jr. in Dolores County, Colorado, this remarkable buck, I already said, scores 226 4/8, which surpasses the previous record, which was held by 8 inches, which is
also insane to think.
I mean, 8 inches on a buck on a mainframe 4-point.
8 inches on a mainframe 4-point is insane.
Yeah. So the story goes, Doug Burris and his crony. I love this. So this is, I borrowed some of this language from the World Wide Web, but which is also in itself is good. Good writing, I thought. So Doug Burris and his cronies, which is cronies is a funny word. I was going to have another comment there.
Isn't that like kind of derogatory, cronies?
I don't know.
Isn't that what you say when you're like kind of talking down on somebody's
I think crony's like a friendly buddy. That's the way I would take it. Yeah.
I have it in my head. That's kind of like the downshot at somebody.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. That's the thing. I don't think anybody's used the word cronies in a really long time. I was going to make a comment there, but for those of you listening, I'm sure you can come up with your own with recent stories that are in the news, which Lorenzo knows what I'm talking about. Yep. But so anyway, Doug Burris and his cronies from San Antonio called their annual deer hunt the Poor Boys Trip. So they would share all their gear and their hunting knowledge, typically venturing out on foot. So it says in 1972, on a trip to the San Juan National Forest, Doug was rattling in muleys, which I thought was an interesting tidbit. And I actually tried to find compare different stories. So one story says that he was just out hiking and jumped a doe and then ended up seeing this buck. There's like some different stories, but I found this one that said he was out rattling in muleys, which is not a technique that I've heard used in ever.
Other than Mexico, yeah.
Right, yeah.
I can't think of anyone who's ever talked about rattling in mule deer.
Me either. But as I was thinking about it, I thought, well, I've killed deer pretty much every way you can kill them. That I spot and stalk, still hunt.
Water.
I've done that. I thought, I've never killed one rattling. Maybe I'll try.
You ever killed one out of a tree stand?
Never killed a mule deer out of a tree stand. Have you really?
Yeah.
Really?
First mule deer I ever killed with a bow.
You shot it out of a tree stand?
Out of a tree stand.
No way.
On a game trail.
I've tried it.
Yeah, I hung it on a game trail.
No kidding. Yeah, I've never done that either.
17 years old. That's probably why, as I was 17 years old, yeah. I wasn't thinking properly. So I'm like, just hang a tree stand.
It worked.
I mean, it was a good buck. It was just a nice little 4-point.
It had to have been like my first or second year bow hunting. I'd scouted this basin, high elevation, so like timberline, right? And you had a bunch of big Doug fir in the bottom of this draw, and there was a group of bucks. There was two really nice bucks that were using this draw. And so I did just what you're saying. I packed in a tree stand, and I climbed up into this great big Doug fir, and I whirled it out, right? Yeah. And I put my tree stand in it, and I climbed up in it, and I sat down, and I looked down, and I was like,
no way.
Oh, hell no. You know, the wind gets to moving you a little bit. And I thought, man, this thing is easily 15 feet higher than it needs to be. And I was so far. And I don't like heights anyway. But yeah, that pretty well cured me from tree stand hunting muleys.
Yeah, it's different being in a tree stand.
That's a good tidbit. I didn't know that about you.
Yeah, very first buck I ever killed with a bow.
I'll have to add that to my list of ways that I need to kill a mule deer.
I just shot the first buck I had a chance at down mm-hmm. the game trail. It was a nice little 4-point.
Yeah, I've shot a whitetail out of a tree stand, but I never shot a mule deer. Never muley.
I've never shot a whitetail out of a tree stand.
Sounds like you and I have some ground to make up. Yeah. So this goes on to say it was a rainy and miserable weather. By day 4, Doug had set his sights on a buck that one of his hunting buddies had seen earlier. He was dropped off in Proven Canyon, a place where he'd killed a buck in the prior year. So get this. So he killed a buck in the same canyon the prior year that was 41 inches wide.
What the?
1972. So it says he spotted a couple bucks in the opposite hillside when a third buck materialized. He knew that this was the one he wanted. He dropped down the canyon and weaved his way through the thick oak brush. On his way to meet the bucks, he nearly stepped on a doe that exploded from her bed. This spooked the bucks. Two of them went left. The buck that he wanted went right. And one shot from his 264, the big boy went down.
The big boy. Yeah. And a 264 caliber. That's awesome.
Yep. So it says when he got home, he took the head and cape to his taxidermist, whose name was Ed, and he was also an official measurer for Boone and Crockett. And he said the green score put the antlers in the top 10. that says, Doug recalled what happened next. Several months later, my phone rang at 1 a.m. And Ed, his taxidermist, blurted out, I think your buck may be the biggest typical ever taken. It was, and it has been ever since. The closest contender, like I said, is 8 inches shorter. And for those interested, it can be seen in the Cabela's store in Dolores, Colorado.
Yeah.
You ever seen it?
I've seen replicas of it. Gotcha. I've never seen it. No.
Gotcha. As I read through this, it said that it was awarded the Sagamore Hills Award. What is that? Yeah. So the Sagamore Hills Award is one of the most prestigious honors in North American big game hunting, presented by the North American Hunting Club, which is formerly part of the Boone and Crockett Club affiliated awards program. The award recognizes the finest trophies taken in a given category, typically, or per entry period among all submissions. And it goes on to say it's not just about raw size, but also about the quality, the symmetry, the overall aesthetic of the animal. Essentially, it celebrates trophies that exemplify perfection of that species. So the Sagamore Hill is named after the home of President Theodore Roosevelt, which is in Oyster Bay, New York.
Yep, and who, mm-hmm. Federal Fish and Game,
yep.
Everything.
So yep. Part of early Boone and Crockett. Yeah,
that's actually cool that they've worked that in to the... Yeah. Award somehow.
So I thought this was interesting. It says the Boone and Crockett Club has only awarded the Sagamore Hill Award 17 times since 1948.
Wow.
Isn't that nuts?
That is wild. So you brought up a really good point there. That's 226 with deduction.
Yeah.
So they're talking about symmetry
as
part of this like Sagamore Hills Award.
Mm-hmm.
So how much deduction was on it? Did it ever say?
I haven't looked. I should know that, but I'm sure it's on the score sheet.
That's 226 net.
Yeah, I don't
Which
know.
I've always not been a fan of that.
Yeah, me either. I like
whatever.
Yeah, I like gross.
Yeah, yeah, if it grew horn, it grew horn. Yeah. Antler. Brady's not here to get mad at me, but
yeah, I was thinking about that today driving down. Isn't it funny? We've talked about mule deer real heavy for two weeks in a row, and the guy that is a mule deer nut's not
isn't
here. Yeah, I secretly love it. Sorry, Brady. I looked down through to see. I wanted to see like some of the other animals that were awarded the Sagamore Hills Award. So some of these I thought were pretty interesting. So 1949, E.C. Haas, Rocky Mountain Goat, 56 and 6/8.
Ooh.
It's pretty big.
That's pretty big.
Pretty big. Let's see. Here's one I thought you'd like. 1957, Frank Cook, a doll sheep, 185 and 6/8.
So insane. That's a book Rocky. Let alone a book doll.
And there was another one in 1961, a doll sheep, 189 and 6/8, taken by Harry L. Swank Jr.
I need to see pictures of this.
189-inch doll. Isn't that nuts?
185 is book Rocky, right?
Yeah.
So those are both. Those would both.
Yep.
Make it as the biggest species of sheep, and they're the smallest species of sheep.
Right.
That's wild.
Yeah, and another one that's a real shocker, 1963, Norman Blank, a stone sheep, 190 and 6/8.
I mean, I would have never guessed that.
Yeah, I know. That's why I pulled these out, because when I looked down through there, I was like, what?
I mean, they're not the smallest species of sheep overall. Like, they're not a Weemsey down in Baja.
Yeah,
but they're the four North American, like the famous slam, like everyone's after the four North American sheep.
Yeah,
they're the smallest of the group. You know, not those ones, obviously, but typically those are the smaller ones you're going to kill.
Yeah. My wife's messaged me. She thinks she's got it's about my kid's gun, by the way.
Oh, nice.
She's like an emergency. Some of these other ones I thought were pretty interesting. One of them I wanted to pull out. So you're an antelope guy, pronghorn guy, 1986, Michael J. Ohako Jr., a 93 and 4/8-inch pronghorn.
Wow. That's a big pronghorn.
93, pretty big one, but yeah.
Mike Gallo's got the record for the Gallo Wines guy.
Mm-hmm.
You know that name?
I know the name.
He's got like some big wine thing.
Gotcha.
It's Gallo Wine, I guess, is pretty big. I'm not a wine drinker, but like if you ask Porter and them, it's a pretty big thing. Porter's that, you know.
Yeah, Porter's a wino.
The hoity-toity kind of wine guy.
Yeah.
But he has the world record for pronghorn.
Wow.
I think it's like 96 or 98.
No
something
way.
Like that. Yeah.
Man, that's ginormous. So a lot of these animals are just like, it's freakishly big. It's
so
hard,
big.
Hard to even fathom, right?
Like think about an 80-inch pronghorn.
Yeah, I mean, I've got a couple, but I mean, they're
93.
I know, 13 inches, 16 inches bigger.
On a two-point, essentially?
Yeah, on a two-point, which is so wild. Yeah, so that was really cool. It was a fun little trip into this this whole thing. So I'd encourage people, do a little Google, and if you want to look at the rest, it's pretty neat. So number two buck, the Svensson buck. The Svensson buck is recognized by Boone and Crockett Records as the number two typical with a score of 218 and 4/8. The buck was taken somewhere along the South Saskatchewan River. Some interesting details about it. It says it was an official measured it in 1970s, but the owner of the family did not care about having it formally entered in the record book at the time. Decades later, the same measure encountered Larry Svensson, which was this kid's nephew, or might be his son, but anyway, a relative, right? And they started talking, the official measure, and he convinced Larry to submit it to the official record book. So after doing so, it was accepted and, you know, placed number two. It says he harvested the iconic muley with a .32 caliber in 1948.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And it said he apparently had no interest in getting it scored. And it's interesting, as you read down through some of these, it's like a pretty, and maybe it's applicable to today, because I don't know that many people that enter deer anymore, right? But yeah, a lot of these stories suggest that, you know, people had no interest. They were just out hunting for meat. And I would say almost every one of these stories, as you read through them, they're like, yeah, they were just out meat hunting.
Yeah.
You know, and
that's been a common theme.
Yeah. And that's, I mean, if you go back to what started this conversation with Colorado's deer.
Yeah. The Brett Ross story.
Brett Ross story. That guy's out hunting cow elk, mostly cow elk. He had a deer tag.
He's a resident of Colorado. Yep. He was on like what's considered as a resident to be one of the general areas.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a cow tag and a deer tag in his pocket. And he was primarily looking for elk to go shoot a cow to meat hunt.
Yeah. And when he shot the buck, all he could see was 3 points. He thought it was a 3-point.
Correct. And just then, happens to be has a huge inline on the back, so it looks like it. Just his back fork alone looks like a big 3-point.
Yeah.
And that's what he thought he had killed.
Yeah. So what I've deducted from all of these, and then Brett's story, obviously, is that if you want to shoot a big buck, you should just go out on a meat hunt.
Yeah.
And big bucks find you, apparently.
That's yeah, the but way the hard part of that is you actually have to commit to just the like mm-hmm. meat hunting in your mind with no other thought. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I could do that. Because I'd already be going into it with like, oh, I have this deer tag, so I'm going to get a cow tag and meat hunt.
Mm-hmm.
And then, but I wouldn't really be bought into that whole side of it if I had
secretly,
a deer tag in my pocket.
It's like an underlying thread in a lot of these that I kind of love. It's just fun. Yeah. Fun that people are out and about. And that's what I'm looking forward to this week is just the unknown.
Being like, out
I have no clue what's going to happen, but who knows? Maybe we'll shoot a 300-inch non-typical.
Just a giant.
Alien
giant.
Number three buck, the Hoback buck. This one was actually pretty cool. So in 1925, a hunter who was apparently interested in meat hunting, not trophies, shot a buck. This is great. He left behind the head, i.e. he didn't even care to preserve it or display the rack. So he left it behind, killed the buck, left it, took all the meat. And it says later, later a ranch hand found the rack, the skull and the antlers in the canyon and brought it into Jackson, Wyoming. The rack was displayed in local establishment, including Mike Meek's saloon and later on a handicraft shop. It eventually went to the possession of the taxidermist who submitted it for Boone and Crockett scoring. It says the Boone and Crockett measured it and awarded it 217 inches, typical. So the score made it the world's record holder for many decades until it was surpassed by the Burris buck in 1972. It says today the antlers and the rack is displayed at the Jackson Hole Museum in Wyoming where people can still see it today. So that's kind of cool. Guy just out meat hunting, just left it behind and a ranch hand went up and found it and was like, yeah, I think I should probably grab that and take it out.
That thing looks giant. Looks like an alien. Maybe I should take it.
Yeah. As part of the story, I thought it was interesting. I didn't really, so the Hoback, right? Mm-hmm. You hear the Hoback. It's like pretty notoriously known among mule deer junkies of a portion of Wyoming. I did a little research just to see what I could find out about the Hoback. So it says the Hoback refers to the Hoback River, Hoback Canyon, surrounding areas in western Wyoming, south of Jackson Hole. Geographically, it's part of the Jackson Hole Valley region. And it talks a little bit about the region and the description of the landscape just sounds like mule deer heaven. So it says the area is rugged, mountainous, full of sagebrush flats, forested ridges, and high elevation mule deer country, which
sounds like where you would kill a buck that big.
Amazing, right? Yeah. Sounds incredible. The Hoback River Canyon Valley are named after John Hoback, which did you know that?
I did not know that.
Okay. He's a mountain man, fur trapper from the early 19th century. John Hoback from 1762 to 1831 was part of the Astore Expedition, the Pacific Fur Company fur trading network working primarily in the American West. His name became attached to the river and the canyon because he traveled, trapped, and explored the region so extensively.
I feel like that would be one of like the majorly big honors back in those days.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because not mm-hmm. there's not like massive business being done back then, so you can't be like leave the world as some world-changing CEO or something.
Have I told you about the canyon I hunted in Wyoming? I drew an elk tag, so I saw it on the map. No. And it's called Warhouse.
Okay.
And I was like, Warhouse, that's weird. Yeah. You know, and then right away I'm like, oh, that must, maybe it's misspelled, it's supposed to be Warhorse.
Yeah,
I could be like Warhorse Canyon, right? So then I got to talking. I don't know if it was my brother or somebody said, oh, it's actually a whorehouse. And a bunch of the canyons that are, and correct me if I'm misstating this, somebody reach out and tell me otherwise. But I was told that a bunch, and if you look at the map, a bunch of the canyons are named after females' names, different names.
Really?
Yeah. So the different canyons were named after some of the working, you know, women that worked at the whorehouse.
So maybe it's not as big of an honor as I thought that you yeah. can get topography yeah. named after you.
That just sparked that memory for me.
Yeah, but to have a region named mm-hmm. after you in those days, I feel like that would be a huge honor.
Pretty cool.
What
huh?
you're saying kind of discounts. Well, actually, I don't know.
I don't know.
That was a huge honor.
Yeah. Yeah, different times.
Think about it. If there was like Kreischer Canyon or something.
Yeah.
Just because you were like, you were the guy.
I got the spot. I know the one I call
it. Like you were the guy.
Right now, I have a canyon. I'd love to call it Kreitzer Canyon.
Kreitzer Canyon.
Yeah. Kreitzer would be rough. You see that on the map, you'd be like, I don't know what the hell that is. I can't pronounce it. I can't even read it. I don't know what the hell that is. But yeah, that was a cool story. So number four, typical, Steve Stainer. This is a picked up buck.
Yeah.
Do you know this buck?
I do know this buck.
You can see it?
Mm-hmm.
So the mule deer buck was discovered in 1994.
Yeah.
Near Coconino National Forest in Arizona, this remarkable find holds the distinction of being the largest typical mule deer ever recorded in Arizona, boasting an impressive score of 216 and 2/8. In the fall of 1996, Steve Stainer was scouting the Rimrock area of Coconino County when he noticed what appeared to be a white rag in the sagebrush. Upon closer inspection, he discovered it was the bleached skull and antlers of a massive mule deer rack. Remarkably, the antlers were in pristine condition, so no rodents or anything like that had, you know, nibbled at it. And it says suggested at the site that it had been killed by a mountain lion. Steve went back to Phoenix and showed it to his dad, who just happened to be an official Boone and Crockett measurer. The antlers featured an outside spread of 31 inches, a left G2 measuring 22 4/8.
That's gigantic.
Crazy, huh?
22?
Yeah, 22 4/8. 22 1/2. So big.
That's so big.
I know.
I've seen one buck, that was over 20, and it was like barely over 20, and it was so insane.
Yeah. I don't think I... on the hoof?
No.
Oh,
killed.
Gotcha.
I held it in my hands.
Yeah, right.
Clay Hill, one of Clay Hill's clients killed it.
Did it look completely alien?
It's so tall. It's like, it's wild. I mean, think about it. An 18-inch G2 is like big, big, big.
How tall is a buck if it has... You hear of a buck being tall, like, oh, that's a tall buck. But how tall would a buck be if he had a 22 1/2-inch G2?
I feel like that's another word past tall.
I'm trying to think, how tall would that be off the base of his head? Like if you paralleled that, you know, if you went.
I mean, it depends on the main
beam.
Yeah,
how he went. Yeah.
On the main beam shape. Because like I remember my cousin hunted a buck that we called Skyscraper because
mm-hmm.
he was super name. Tall. That's super tall.
Great name.
But it was because his main beams were like, instead of coming out to his ears and mm-hmm. around, his main beams just kind of like went up. So whereas G2 forked, it was already so far off his head. Like, I think his G2s were 18. Or like 18 and a little bit of change, which is so giant. And you like how his main beam already sat up mm-hmm. high instead of coming out over his ear. Like you just look super tall, but yeah. He's 18. That's thing's 22 1/2. That's 4 1/2 inches bigger.
Big.
It's crazy.
This goes on to say that the exceptional set of antlers are on display at the National Collection of Heads and Horns at Johnny Morris's Wonders of Wildlife. I don't know why I'm laughing. It just comes off as like a little bit Willy Wonka to
it. Does. It does.
The wonders. Sure it does. The Wonders of Wildlife Museum and Aquarium in Springfield, Missouri. I was reading this story, which led me down a couple other rabbit holes I was interested in. One of them being like, how does a mountain lion actually kill a deer? And I'm thinking of this video. Do you remember seeing this video that went around a few years ago where you had this lion and it jumped on this muley? It's a nice 4-point buck. And he like clamps onto it and he's got all four of his, you know, feet into it. And he's like kind of hanging off the front end of it. And he's like biting down on its nose.
Yeah, I do remember that.
And I remember watching that and thinking like, oh, that's interesting. I wonder if that's like primary method of kill, right? Do they just like bite down on the nose and suffocate him? So then I started reading and a lot of this stuff, it's like I've been in the woods for 30 some years, right? And you just think like, oh, I know how that works, right? But like, I don't know if I've never actually seen
the actual mechanics behind it. Yeah,
I've never seen
it. You know it happens and you know it's a thing, but the actual mechanics behind
it. Yeah, but I don't know how. So I did a little reading on how does a mountain lion kill a deer. So I pulled up a bunch of papers and I read through, you know, a bunch of different statistics and I pulled out some things I thought were interesting. So this says a typical stalking distance can be just 15 to 30 feet before attacking.
I wish I could get that close.
30 feet?
That's nothing.
That's close.
That's very close.
Which makes me wonder how many lions have been within 30 feet of me. I didn't even know they were there.
Yeah, I don't like to think about that part of it.
Yeah. It says when the lion closes, it launches an explosive sprint to catch the deer. Mountain lions can reach a max speed of 40 to 50 miles per hour, but only for short distance.
So usually, I could barely outrun one. Just barely.
Usually less than 100 meters. I've only killed one lion. I've told this story before, but hands down in my life, the most athletic thing I've ever seen in my ever, any animal, anything, doesn't matter. This lion, I shot it and it peeled off and it came down this tree, which was a big leaning dead dug fir, right? And it probably took, I don't know, 2 or 3 strides and launched out of that tree from probably a height of like 25 feet, I would bet, at least. Just like launch. Landed on the ground on a downhill slope and took off and ended up dying and, you know, passed. But
it landed like nothing?
Dude, it landed like no big deal. But I remember watching that thing come out of the tree and just being like, holy shit. I can't believe. I mean, it was probably 160 pound lion. I mean, big Tom. Book Tom, actually.
Really?
Yeah. Talking about
and it just landed that, dude, no problem.
It just bailed out of this tree. Like I couldn't believe, just launched out. I'll never forget like that. You know, the Puma logo.
Yeah.
That's looked exactly just like that. What it looked like. That's exactly what it looked like, man. Just like hind feet off that tree and just.
That is wild, man.
It was nuts.
It's interesting. That one got killed by a lion. My dad had a very hard tag to have in Arizona. And, he was going to go after a certain buck. It was a big buck, because why not when you have a tag like that? And we had trail camera on the water. And I remember the guy he was going with sent him the trail camera of the buck.
Mm-hmm.
And it was in a fight with a lion in the water trough. Like it had jumped into the water trough to try to get away from the lion. Like they were kind of scuffled. And it had got his face pretty ripped up, like in the video. But the lion had ended up shifting down like below its neck. Mm-hmm. So it had its front and hinds kind of like in the front shoulders of the deer.
Yep.
And it just started biting onto his throat and it ended up suffocating. That the buck died. So needless to say, my dad didn't hunt it, but it was wild. I need to find that video. That's what I told you earlier today.
Was it a trail camera video?
Trail camera video.
Gotcha. Video. Man, that's insane.
So there's like, you know, it'll video for a minute and a half or whatever it was. And then it kind of goes dark for a little bit. And then next thing you know, he's in the water and the lion had shifted like below the deer to where now he's biting like underneath his throat and he ended up killing that buck.
That's so crazy.
It's on video and it's the one my dad wanted to kill.
They only kill the sick and the young. You know that.
Oh, of course. It's like where I used to hunt in Mexico.
Yeah.
2 days before I got there, a lion killed the biggest typical on the entire ranch in his prime, like absolute prime. But he was so young or sick, obviously, right?
So crazy. Yeah, opportunistic. I'm sure they'll take whatever they can get.
Whatever. Remember when I brought that head
home? Yeah, I do remember.
I was going down to hopefully hunt
him. That was a big deer.
Yeah.
Isn't it like, mounted somewhere?
Yeah, it's mounted out there.
Yeah, in the showroom, right?
I brought the horns back, yeah.
Yeah, mounted in the showroom.
But 2 days before I got there, he went missing. And I was down there for 6 days. Couldn't find him on the fifth day because it started to stink so bad.
Yeah.
We found it, and it was him.
Man, what are the chances that in all that country that your dad,
buck.
That one buck.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
He's mounted out there. I can show everyone and talk about how upset I was.
Yeah. So I was reading further. It says the lion bites the throat or the base of the skull, severing the spinal cord or crushing the windpipe.
That's what the one did on the trail cam. He crushed his windpipe.
Yeah. So it says this can break the neck vertebrae, causing instant paralysis. Once killed, the lion drags the carcass in a secluded area to feed. They cover it with dirt, leaves, branches, hide it from scavengers. So I've definitely found lion kills, you know, that are kind of buried.
That's how ours was buried, the one in Mexico.
Yep. I saw something the other day on Facebook. It was a deer. It's like dragged up in a tree. And somebody was like, what would do this? And you go down through it and everybody was like, lion, 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 lion. And I was like, mountain lions never drug a deer up a tree. Like leopards will.
Yeah. I was like, where was this?
I want to say it was in Arizona.
Probably was a leopard.
I wonder if it was a jaguar.
Or a panther, whatever the jaguar. That's what I mean.
I wondered.
Couldn't find the words.
Pretty weird, huh?
They have that pack of jaguars that go through there.
They have, I've seen them documented.
Yeah, like every couple of years, they're documented on going through Arizona.
Right.
That had to have been that, right?
I can't think of anything else. I'm like,
I've never heard of a lion.
Yeah, I was like, lion won't do that. I know a mountain lion will bury it, right? Like a cache. Like,
everything like, I've ever seen. Yeah, like seen a grizzly one.
As I was reading this, the one thing that really jumped out to me, it says it can crush the vertebrae and cause instant paralysis. And I was like, you know, that guy on Instagram that says, what? No way. You know, that guy. That was my reaction to this. I was like, what? No way. But so that led me, I'm like, how much bite pressure? So I thought this was kind of interesting. Bite force of a mountain lion is between 600 and 700 pounds per square inch. And then I went back and compared that. So a gray wolf, 400 to 500.
That's
pretty good.
Sounds pretty good.
Domestic dog, 250 to 450, depending on the dog.
So that's like big dog. They're probably
big. Measuring. Yeah, 450 would be a big old what? I mean,
pit bull, something.
Probably a pit bull. Yeah, which is still
some
crazy.
Kind of mastiff breed.
Mm-hmm. What do you think one of the larger ones is?
Of what?
By pressure.
Like out in nature?
Yeah.
Land animal?
Yeah.
Grizzly?
Yeah. 1,000 to 1,200.
Ooh.
It says. Can you imagine one of those clamping down on you?
So double a lion?
Yeah. I used to think it would be, you know, and I'm sure it is, it's terrifying to be mauled by a grizzly, but you hope that he just bites you out, right?
Cause yeah, just done.
1,200 pounds of bite pressure, you're probably just done.
I wonder, like, humans are so soft, too.
You know what I mean?
Like,
if
you got a hold of your arm, that it's got to, at 1,200 pounds, it's got to just go straight through.
Yeah, bone and everything.
Hot knife through butter.
Yeah. The other thing I was looking at was how many deer do lions kill per year? And this is interesting. I don't know how true it is, but it says males, larger territories, typically territories between 150 and 400 square miles, will kill 15 to 20 deer per year on average.
Seems pretty light.
Seems pretty light, but that's what science tells us.
Science also, though, has been said that they only kill to feed.
Yeah, and I know, I mean,
they've been documented multiple times, sport killing.
Yeah, they'll do surplus killing.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. They talk about lions getting into, you know, pens with alpacas or something like that.
And they'll just kill them all. Just to
going keep, the, full
keep
ham.
The skills fresh. You know, for whatever reason, mm-hmm. like that's my take on it is, right? Mm-hmm. You're only as good as how many times you do something.
Yeah. They said females, 10 to 15 deer per year on average. This is actually a statistic I thought was interesting. So it says mountain lions succeed in only 15 to 30% of hunting attempts. And I was thinking 15 to 30%?
That's actually quite high.
Damn good. If that's true.
I mean,
I was
national
like,
average of bow hunting success is 8%, yeah. right?
Yeah, I mean, if you like an over-the-counter elk tag, most of them are single digits.
Yeah, that's
you know
like, that's
probably anywhere between 1% and 10%. I would say, but
it's sub 8. Mm-hmm. Over-the-counter elk, that's sub 8.
Yeah,
for
that's
sure.
not on. It says 15% of attempts. I mean, it's just
so that's double the national average of archery.
To me, that's pretty mind-boggling. That's crazy, and I guess. Maybe it makes more sense if you are a lion, you're out there day in, day out, and your whole living is dependent on you being successful and killing a deer.
But
you probably
three out of 10 attempts?
It's pretty crazy.
That's like extremely high, I feel like.
And me too. When I read it, I was like, oh shit. That was like
and they say only 15
yeah,
to
only,
30?
Yeah. Yeah, that was one of those stats that when I read it, it jumped out at me. I was like, oh man, no way. That's heavy.
Isn't it pretty, if you look across like our product,
mm-hmm.
I feel like this is anecdotal because I've never pulled these numbers. I just want to get your feel for it. But even across like the rifle hunts, I feel like it's maybe 50 to 60 is kind of like the higher bar that I see.
Pretty high.
Yeah. For harvest success.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if so I see like a rifle hunt with 50% success, yeah,
that's good.
That's good.
Great. That's a rifle. Yeah. Humans like putting together plans and spot and stock and the whole deal.
Mm-hmm.
Lions are 30%. That's wild.
Prolific.
Yeah. They're really good at it.
Yeah, and I don't want to get bit by one, as it turns out. Clamped out on me. I
feel like we learned that today.
What's your go-to if you get attacked by a lion? What's your move?
Man, I don't even want to think about it. I don't know. Eyeballs?
Eyeballs.
Scream like, like a little girl? I don't know.
Eyeballs is probably a good bet. Yeah, eyeballs and nose, right?
Just like everyone always, the whole shark thing. Like, I've always been terrified of sharks.
Mm-hmm.
So everyone's like, go for the eyes. So mm-hmm. It's always just been something in my head.
Me too. That's the go-to. If I ever get attacked by a lion, go to the eyes.
I mean, that's if you can.
Just lay there like a dead fish.
Yeah.
Number five typical buck, the Ray Talbot buck, was harvested in 1961 by Ray Talbot, then sheriff of Franklin County, Idaho. It says, in the fall of 1961, Ray Talbot was riding his horse through the sagebrush near Worm Creek, Idaho, aiming to fill his freezer when a massive mule deer buck suddenly jumped up from cover. Talbot dismounted, took a single shot from his pre-64 Model 70 Winchester 243.
Love that. That's what I killed my first deer with, 243.
Really?
Oh, yeah. I told you that on the podcast the other day.
I forgot. 243 is kind of a sick... It's kind
that
of
was
a,
my first thing I killed with. 243.
I don't hear anybody hunting with a 243 anymore.
The Winchester 243. Me and this guy would get along. Yeah. You know what else I'm realizing as you go through this, though? These guys are all very good shots.
You know what I mean?
It seems like they're all just...
Well, it makes me wonder, how many bucks did they miss?
Along the way?
Along the way.
Right?
Yeah. Because
all these guys are like just...
Yeah.
One single shot, put the big boy down.
Yeah, that's probably just good storytelling.
Yeah.
It says the head was placed in a barn and largely forgotten until Glenn Page, a conservation officer and Boone and Crockett measurer, took notice. The Ray Talbot buck scores an impressive 215 and 5/8. It says the antlers featured an outside spread of 31 inches and left G two tines, matted again 22 and 4/8. Seems like so if you want a book, you know, like a high placing book, you got to have like a 22 inch G two.
That's what it sounded like.
That's what I'm looking for. It says this remarkable buck has been displayed at a variety of prestigious locations, including Idaho's Fish and Game Office in Boise, Boone and Crockett headquarters in Cody, Wyoming. And again, this is the Museum of Natural History in Washington, D.C. Today, it resides in the National Collection of Heads of Horns, which is part of this remarkable buck. So that's part of this Johnny Morris's Wonders of Wildlife Museum and Aquarium in Springfield, Massachusetts. So this is the second time that I saw that noted. So I was I'm starting to wonder, and I don't know anything about this thing, this National Collection of Heads and Horns at the Wonders of Wildlife Museum. So I started reading about that.
Willy Wonka's factory.
Yeah. So it's in sounds better than Willy Wonka's factory, right?
Yeah.
So it's in Springfield, Missouri. It opened on September 22nd, 2017, so not all that long ago.
No, not that long ago at all.
Square footage, I thought, was impressive, spanning 350,000 square feet.
Wow.
It stands as one of the world's largest wildlife attractions. Johnny Morris. Do you know who Johnny Morris is?
Yeah, Bass Pro Shops. Huge hunter.
How did you know that off the top of your head? I mentioned it earlier, and
I don't know.
I should know that. I just did.
I've known him of his name. I don't know him, but his son is also a huge hunter.
Mm-hmm.
I just always remembered the old school Bass Pro Shops where it was always Johnny Morris's Bass Pro Shops, like the commercials. Mm-hmm. Always had his name involved. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. Here's an interesting detail. It says he spearheaded a campaign that secured funding through a combination of private donations and public support, including a portion of the city's hotel tax.
Really?
It says, despite the initial public backlash over the use of public funds, Morris refunded the local public money and proceeded with private financing to complete the project.
Yeah, I feel like he could refund that.
Yeah.
Just with what he's done in his life.
He's got it.
Yeah.
Like in his back pocket or something.
Yeah. You know something interesting?
What?
Supposedly, I don't think there's any like proven fact to this, but supposedly, and it does make a little bit of sense, like all those Bass Pro Shops and all that stuff, they have aquariums, they mm-hmm. have heads.
Yep.
And then they also have, like, when you walk in, you go
chills
through that, like...
Chills does, too. Wonder if they have
the Shields.
I think so. Yeah, they got big aquariums.
Maybe then. But when you walk through Bass Pro, you go through like the foot traffic counter, you know, like when you're walking onto, like when you're walking into Disneyland or whatever, like it counts the amount of people going through. Supposedly, all of their retail locations are museum based, which would give them very favorable
treatment. Okay. I could see that.
There's no like, because
they're like museums. I would say the last time.
I mean, they are. So supposedly, like, they're licensed or whatever that permitted or licensed as.
Yeah, those Cabela's with the
even
big.
Even though they're retail spaces.
The big mountain, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's kind of a fun fact.
They have like a Super Cub or something flying over it.
It's always been an interesting thing to me is because nobody really knows.
I didn't know that. That's interesting. This this national collection of heads and horns, I thought has a historic exhibit that showcases remarkable achievements of North American big game species. It was originally established in 1906 by the Boone and Crockett Club. And it was originally intended to memorialize big game species whose populations were declining. It says the collection grew nearly to 700 species by 1910 and was housed in a dedicated building at the Bronx Zoo.
The Bronx Zoo?
Yep. Open to the public. It says the exhibit was officially dedicated in memory of the vanishing big game of the world, highlighting the urgent need for conservation. At the time, many species were facing severe population decline. Which kind of falls in line with the whole, you know, hunting is conservation, right?
And for sure.
You know, you've got these things which maybe to people might not make sense. You have animals on a wall that are dead and it's stuffed. It almost seems like you're putting them up on a wall to be like, yeah, look what I did, you know? But
for sure.
Which people can take it as such, but it just, goes back to show you that when you add value to an animal, to a species, and it's
absolutely
regulated through, you know, conservation efforts, like, you know, we have.
Well, that's the whole thing with Boone and Crockett in the first place, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, it was never supposed to be a real trophy where now everyone chases it. It was supposed to be
fair chase, ethical hunting, conservation.
And it was the conservation side of it was supposed to be like genetically, what are these animals capable of?
Mm-hmm.
And that's why they would collect the data on the size of these animals. It was never supposed to be like this trophy,
right?
Like, trophy meaning like what you can put on your desk and show off to people. It was always meant to be on the conservation side of understanding what species we're capable of.
And I still think it is. I just think, you know, it gets a little bastardized by
taking a left turn a little bit.
Ego. You know, we, you know, men get involved and we're like, hey, look what I did.
Right?
Yeah.
Mine's bigger.
Yeah, but I still think, you know, it's still based in conservation and record keeping.
Which I appreciate.
Me too.
Just to know what's capable. It's like humans. We
like a museum.
Well, yeah, true. But humans, we height and weight.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone has that documented.
Yep.
And it's just to understand like what is capable of humans.
You know? Yeah. I need to visit this place, I think.
I know. It sounds really cool. And it's in Missouri, so we could duck hunt.
We could whitetail hunt too.
All duck hunt. Where I'm at in my mind right now.
Yeah. Before I jump into non-typicals, there was one other buck with an interesting story, and I don't know the details of this story I loved, so I wanted to include it. So this is the number 13 buck, the Urban H. Rainer buck at 212 and an eighth. And I think this was cited from, Outdoor Life, I want to say. It says, when you have 16 kids, hunting is about the best way to feed them all.
Oh, 16.
16.
I have two and I'm about ready to.
So get this. Mind. It says, with 10 boys to his name, Urban Rainer was cruising the Snake River breaks on a warm day back in 1979 with his international scout. And then
That's what I hunted in.
Says him, you did?
Yeah. That's what I grew up hunting in. In Utah.
Who had one?
International Scout. I can't remember if it was my dad's or my Uncle Heath's, but either of them two. That's what was there, is an International Scout.
That's like one of
those.
That's
awesome.
It's one of those like legendary vehicle like names that I've heard.
Yeah.
I didn't really even know. I don't know that I could like pick one out, you know? So I did a little Google search and I was looking at them. They're pretty cool.
My brother and I have always had an affinity. We've always, I can't remember the company name, but there's a company that like redoes them now, like refurbs them inside, outside, makes them usable, put a new motor in the whole deal. Blake and I, my brother, like we've talked about it just because that's where we started.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? like with the family. My dad, actually, now that I think about it, my dad, I talked about this on the last podcast too. He grew up hunting the Ponsagot when it was an open, like an open unit. So he would grow up with his uncle and a couple other family members from California. There is a picture of a giant deer on the hood of an International Scout. And it's one of my favorite pictures of my dad, because he was like mid-college age, and he's got the sickest mustache, long flowy hair. He's wearing like the cowboy style felt orange hat.
Is it like a 70s mustache? Oh yeah.
Like straight 70s, you know.
Cutting a wide swath. Oh yeah.
Like straight just 70s greaser guy. It's awesome.
I was looking, so the International Scout was produced by International Harvester, which was based in Fort Wayne, Indiana, between 1961 and 1980. It was built to compete directly with the Jeep CJ, which is one of the earliest SUV style go anywhere rigs for ranchers, hunters, and outdoorsmen, it says. But just a classic hunting rig. You know?
It reminds it like Broncos.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Like to me, my generation, like a Bronco. That's what an International Scout was to my dad.
Yep.
Which is cool to think about.
Kind of
that's awesome. He was in a scout.
Brings back that nostalgia. Yeah. Right.
Now, right? Maybe this is a sign that you need and Blake one. Do need to rebuild one.
The other part of the story I thought was great. It says a dozen does filed out of a draw in front of them and the big buck followed. The Rainer boys opened up with no one connecting.
Okay. So not all of them are good shots then.
All of
them and not one connection.
I secretly really loved the thought. Just the visual.
10 boys.
The visual of 10 boys piling out of this International Scout, and they said that there was a CJ3 Jeep following. So they had this whole group of people. You have 11 people potentially in two vehicles, small vehicles, right?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
And just this group of does filing out and just 10 boys filing
jumping
out of this.
Out. You know, they're little Hanyok boys too. Oh, like you know, they're not.
And just unloading.
Oh yeah.
With no one connecting.
Imagine 10 boys growing up in a household. Like they obviously are a certain kind of boy and all 10 just jumping out. It's like a little militia.
Yeah. The visual of that just had me cracking up. But it says, with one shot from his .30-06, Urban severed the buck's spine at 175 yards. And then it goes on to say...
So dad had to play cleanup to all his boys?
Yeah, dad played cleanup and tipped it over.
That's the best part.
Yeah, spine this buck at 175 yards. And then it goes on to say, did I mention that he only had one arm?
What?
Yeah.
No, you have not mentioned that.
It said a mill accident took the other one. Says the boys
which accident?
A mill.
Oh, he
like
worked at a
mill. Wood mill or something like that. Yeah,
worked at a mill.
So he only had one arm, 175 yards, spined it, 30-06.
How?
I don't know.
It's really impressive.
Pretty neat. It goes on to say the boys winched the carcass up to the Jeep, which is just a cool, I don't know. I love that one. Even though that buck was not in the top five, it was number 13. I just love the whole visual of it. Like, as I was reading down through all these accounts and then started doing more research, I was just like, oh, I got to throw this one. This is incredible.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you know the score of the number one non-typical?
It's 355 or 356, something like that.
Man.
This is the Alberta buck.
Yep. The broader buck. Yeah. 355 and 2/8.
Yeah. I know. And Clay and I have talked about this buck quite a bit.
Killed 1926 in Alberta.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was a stark difference that jumped out at me as you go from... What, 226, is that right, for typical to non-typical, 350, what did I just say?
355. Yeah.
130 inches of bone.
Think about.
Extra.
Yeah, think about that.
That's crazy.
Think about just killing a 350 bull. Yeah, that is a big.
Yeah, my biggest bull.
That is
barely,
a big bull. That's a really big bull.
Yeah, and then a mule deer with 355 inches.
It's insane.
Seems insane. The world record produced one heck of a hunt and got one. So this is the writing. I love the writing in these. It got one 75-year-old man thrown into jail.
What?
Did you know this?
No, I did not know this part.
So
of the
it
story.
Says in the fall of 1926, found Edmund Broder and two hunting buddies headed to hunting camp in a 1914 Model T and a 1924 McLaughlin touring car west of Edmonton, Alberta. I love these details. So once the road dissolved, they hired a horse and sleigh.
So it's late season.
Yeah. Yep, to get them into south of Chip Lake. Ed left the camp around 1 p.m. and followed some deer tracks. He cut moose tracks but decided to stay on the course of the deer tracks. He came to a clearing where he saw two deer, trained his 32 Winchester Special on the larger buck's spine.
So this is like a thing back then?
This is like a common thing back then?
Spine, like they went for the spine?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know, but
it's a very small target comparative to the actual
lungs.
Vitals.
Yeah. But I did read that in some of these accounts, it does specifically call out he aimed at the buck's spine, which is
maybe such a small target.
I mean, they do.
What do you have? 2-3 inches there?
Two and a half, 3. And they do drop in their tracks if you hit it.
But, I mean, they for sure drop.
Yep. But yeah, that was interesting, I thought.
So the bigger of the two bucks is what you said?
Two deer. Trained his 32 Winchester Special on the larger deer spine.
I wonder how big the other
one was.
I
know. Wouldn't you want to know? Go back in time.
It was like a little 2-point.
Yeah, it can't be.
It can't be.
Quote, what a rack that one's got. He wrote in a letter recounting the hunt.
Awesome.
Which is such a cool detail. This says, when Ed died in 1968, he left no will. He had numerous children left to his name. It said who would get the Model T, the chaps, the saddle, but who got the monster buck? It said the buck stayed on the wall of the family home until 1973 when Don Broder, one of Ed's son, took it to a sportsman show and then mounted it in his own home. In 1997, the other siblings filed lawsuit wanting the head returned.
Oh, no.
Don refused to reveal whereabouts. And he spent 6 days in jail for contempt of court. Appearing back in court, Don admitted to selling the head to a collector on eBay.
Oh, no.
For $170,000. It says, in the end, the earnings were split between the siblings. Don's portion went to pay for his contempt of court fine.
Oh, no.
$170,000 was still a lot of money. But
that's a shitload of money, but like...
I know.
Family. I mean, you hear about families being torn up over business.
Yeah.
That shit all the time, but a deer that dad killed?
I didn't know that about that part of the story.
But I didn't know that either.
Pretty interesting.
So he went to prison, or jail,
went
I
to jail
say,
for a minute. Just for a hot minute.
His entire portion had to go to his contempt
didn't say
of court
the
fine?
It says his portion went, I don't know if that's the whole, all of it, or just a portion of it. I mean, it's tough to say. I mean, I don't know how many people they split it between, but $170,000 split. It says he had a number of children, so I don't know exactly how many, but pretty crazy, man. Huh?
So the one just stole it then.
Yeah, and sold it on eBay.
eBay.
Yeah, that's what it says.
In what year?
1997, it says.
Man, eBay was fresh back then.
Yeah, so it says.
Wasn't eBay like 95?
Oh, wait. So it says this in 1997, the siblings filed suit wanting the head returned. It doesn't say the year that he sold it on eBay. So I don't know exactly when that would have been. eBay wouldn't have been until later, I'm sure. But the
1995, yeah.
Yeah. Pretty nuts, though, huh? On good old eBay.
1995 eBay. That's why when you said 97, I'm like, man, that eBay was super fresh.
When's the last time you were on eBay?
Actually, it's funny you say that. Last Christmas.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Do you want to know why?
Yeah.
Or should I just leave it at that? And everybody can wonder what the hell I was doing on eBay.
It depends on how scandalous.
It's actually very non-scandalous. So my kid loves Cars, the movie. Loves
it. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And they they made a bunch of collectible mini, like metal cars. I can't remember if it was Mattel or any one of those. Like little car remakers or whatever, like the little mini ones. Mm-hmm. And they made all the Cars characters. And I mean like all of them, all the Cars characters you could think of throughout all the three
movies
or whatever. So I spent like an entire September, October, November scouring eBay to buy all those collector cars for my son.
Did you get all of them?
I've gotten all but one.
Oh, nice. Do you know the last time I used eBay really significantly was in college, and I would sell sheds on eBay.
That's smart.
Shed elk antlers. And you could take them to an antler buyer and you get like per pound. But at the time the cost was pretty low. Like per pound, it wasn't up like it is, you know, has been. But I sold a number of sets on that, and it took me about 3 or 4 sets that I sold on eBay before I realized if I had my wife hold these,
you could sell way more.
I get 100, 150, 200 bucks more per set. Isn't that funny?
You really figured that out?
Yeah.
It's smart.
I did. Yep.
It's really smart.
Out there somewhere, there's some photos of my wife holding shit antlers that we sold on eBay in the front yard.
That's so awesome.
Number two.
Men are such simple species, man.
I know.
So simple.
Isn't that silly? Number two buck, 339 and 2/8. It says date killed. It was prior to 1892. Hunter unknown. So it says, you might think that after being dead for 120 years, the origin of a mighty fine set of antlers would fade over time. Not so for this buck, which is reported to have been given as a gift prior to 1892 by an Indian hunter to Sir Edgar, I'm not going to, Dudeney, then the Lieutenant Governor of British Columbia. It says, the legend has it that this buck was taken with stick and string.
Wow.
Bow and arrow prior to 1892 by a Native American hunter.
That's insane, actually.
Isn't that nuts?
You know what else is crazy, though, too? Would you say it's 338?
339 and 2/8.
339? Think about the difference. 339 to 355. That's the difference between number one and number two.
Yeah,
that's
true.
That's a lot. I wasn't expecting you to say something that much lower.
Yeah, I just thought it was cool that a guy killed it with bow and arrow.
Oh, absolutely.
Prior to 1892.
I mean, leave it to a native. Isn't that what it says?
Yeah.
It was gifted from a native. Mm-hmm. I mean, if anybody's going to kill a buck like that with a bow.
Gifted.
Might as well be the best hunters on planet Earth.
It goes on to say that the guy that had it was so impressed with the rack that he shipped it to the Vienna, Austria in 1910 as part of a big game exhibition. Despite being screwed to a wooden shield and held together by the original hide, the rack made it back home in one piece. It says in 1993, the family sold the rack in 1995 and went to the Boone and Crockett judges panel for scoring. But there was one minor significant problem.
Maybe. Minor significant.
Yeah,
that doesn't sound
that's
right.
Bad writing. It says the skull was cracked, which could disqualify the rack. It says the judges took x-rays and determined that the rack was in good enough shape to quantify. 24 points on the right side, 23 on the left.
Oh, shit.
Not wild. I would encourage people.
What did you kill? Yeah, I killed a 6x5. Yeah, I killed a
24 by 23.
7x9. What did you kill? 24 by 23.
It's insane. I would encourage people, if you're listening to this, go look at some of these, man. It's just so fun to look at them. There's one picture that I remember. There's this dude standing. He's got like giant beard, classic like 70s, 80s, you know, some sports, you know, old hoodie. And he's got like a pair of sweats and a pair of flip flops or something. He's just standing there. He's got those big horn rim glasses, you know, like from the 70s, like Dahmer would wear.
I love it.
It's great. The imagery behind a lot of these is awesome. You should go look at it.
I would imagine so.
Mm-hmm. Number three buck, 330 and an eighth, killed in 1943. It says, taken in Box Elder County, Utah, this giant of a muley made the rounds of the western United States. It says, contemporary and retrospective accounts say that Alton Hunsaker was hunting on horseback in Baldhead Canyon, Box Elder County in 1943 with three friends. The buck was taken with a 32 Winchester Special. It says the rack was extraordinary, described as so full of junk that half of it was still in velvet, meaning that the antlers still had non-typical tines that had portions of velvet that he couldn't rub off.
Yeah. That's big when that happens.
Yeah.
Big.
Yeah. Those bucks that are just still got velvet in the nooks and crannies. Yep. It says that the antlers are displayed in bars. This is another part of all these stories that I love.
They're displayed in bars and pubs.
Yeah. Just the progression of where these things end up. Like one was in a laundromat. One was in a, you know, a gift shop. This one says it was displayed in bars, visitor centers, museums, and then finally scored and recorded by Boone and Crockett, where it stood the test of time as the number three buck of all time.
Box Elder.
Yeah, man, which is not.
No. That's interesting.
There is a ton of sagebrush in Box Elder County, I'll say that.
It's really close to Nevada, too.
Mm-hmm. When you drive through it, you look out across that. It's just like these big rolling sagebrush landscapes, you know, pinyon juniper sage country. But now, I mean, like currently, you don't hear a lot of
I know
big,
that's what's, a lot that's of big what's bucks. Wild.
Mm-hmm.
Like if he was there.
Might be a hidden gem.
Yeah, maybe.
Number four bucks from Nevada. Did you know that?
I did not know that. Actually, I think I did know that. 326 or something?
325 and 6/8.
Yeah, I did know that.
Yep. Yeah, 1955.
I said 326. It's 325 and 6/8.
Well, you were off by. Yeah.
It's like Price is Right.
By 2/8. By 2/8.
I do know that. It's
denied.
White Pine County.
Says Nye County.
Nye, yeah.
Yep. It says it's got a 22 by 24.
Holy shit. It
said, here's a detail. It says this deer weighed 300 pounds when Clifton Faria, F-A-U-R-I-A, shot the buck in Stoneburger Basin in Nye County, Nevada. What part of Nevada is Nye County?
Not a good part.
Really?
Yeah.
Is it like north, south, east, west? Do you know off the top of your head?
It's kind of like central.
Okay.
But it has like a big, like mushroom mm-hmm. top to it. So it's like real small in the bottom and then kind of mushrooms out.
Gotcha. Sagebrush country?
Some of it, yeah.
Like pinyon and juniper sage type
More
stuff?
More so pinyon juniper, yeah.
Interesting bit of info about this one. So after Clifton, the guy that shot it.
I mean, it's in the good spot.
Gotcha.
For sure.
That's Oh yeah. I'm tracking.
It's like dead
central. 131, 132.
Yeah. It's like 13 and maybe a little bit of 24.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
Maybe a little bit of 24, but 13's in that.
I don't even know enough. I wonder if you go back to 1955, state probably wasn't divided up into units. It was probably just OTC. You just got a tag and went anywhere.
Yeah.
I would bet. So this guy killed this buck and he died the next year. So he killed it in 1955 and died in 1956, which I tried to find out more information about that and couldn't find anything. It says the antlers hung in his garage. Then an uncle displayed them in his California restaurant for 6 years. After the restaurant closed, the antlers went back to the garage until they were placed in an Oregon storage unit for 8 years. It says, until the head and the 270 that he used to kill it with went back to Clifton's son. It says, in 1991, he moved the head to a business owned by a concierge of racks who contacted him, and then it was measured by Boone and Crockett and then taped out. It's Nevada's largest non-typical buck ever taken.
Crazy.
Which is pretty damn cool.
What candy did you say?
Stoneburger. Let me pull.
I'm gonna try to look. I want to know where that is.
Yeah, Stoneburger Basin, Nye County. Do you think you've killed a deer out of that same basin?
No.
Close to?
It's pretty south. Stoneburger.
Mm-hmm.
How do you spell Stoneburger?
S-T-O-N-B-U.
S-T-O-N. No E.
S-T-O-N-E. B-U-R-G-E-R, it says. Stoneburger.
Canyon.
Basin.
Basin.
Yep. Nye County, Nevada. That'd be kind of fun.
I know. I'm gonna try to see if I can.
Some of these would be kind of fun just to go chase the country that they were killed in, right? Just go look at it, see what it looks like.
Yeah, for sure.
Just try to put yourself back in time and imagine what it might have been like.
I feel like everything's so different now, though, and changed. Like, could you even think what it would be like back then?
No, but it'd be fun to sit there and
reminisce.
Yeah, reminisce, make up stories in your head. Number five buck, 324 and an eighth, killed in 1943 in Arizona. This is the William L. Murphy buck, taken on November 14th, which is also my birthday.
Hey, there we go.
which is a fun little tidbit. It says it was taken in Arizona's North Kaibab Plateau. Stands as the state's largest non-typical mule deer ever recorded. This extraordinary buck was not officially recognized until three decades later when Murphy's son-in-law, William L. Kareem, submitted it to the Boone and Crockett Club for scoring. We kind of know the Kaibab. It's pretty notorious, I guess you would say, as being a big buck producing area. And I think probably at some point we've mentioned the Kaibab experiment. Do you know what the Kaibab experiment they call it? I bet you do. But what were you going to say?
This is coming back right now. It's saying units 261 through 268.
Okay.
So 26.
Gotcha.
Which that's not what I would have guessed.
Yeah, but it was 1955.
That's true. It's a very yeah. good point. That's why I say, can you even reminisce and think what it would be like back
times
then?
Times have changed. It would be so fun. Do you ever have that game you play where it's like, if you had a time machine, you know, and people play this game, like, what would you like to go back and see? You know,
yeah.
and I think I've heard Joe Rogan say, I want to go back and see the ancient pyramids and how they were constructed.
Yeah.
And, you know, all these different things. And all that stuff's really cool. But, man, I would really enjoy going back to like 1940, you know,
and hunting
and just, yeah, seeing what it was like or like this Kaibab experiment. So, Kaibab experiment says initial deer numbers around 1906, wildlife officials estimated was only roughly 4,000 to 5,000 mule deer on the plateau. It says at the time, predators, mountain lions, wolves, bobcats, coyotes were considered vermin. Federal and state wildlife agencies decided that they were going to do aggressive predator management and killed nearly all predators to improve deer populations. Hunting was heavily restricted in the early years, also to allow deer populations to increase. So in 1906, 4,000 to 5,000 deer. By 1919, 50,000 deer. And then 1924, they have an estimate, although they vary, of 100,000 deer
really?
On the Kaibab Plateau in 1924.
I'd like to see that.
So I would like to go back and see that. That would be pretty neat.
That'd be really hard for me. Like, if you had one chance to go back,
mm-hmm.
one chance to go back. Like, it shows you how much of a degenerate hunter I am. Because, like, I would love to go back and see, like, the Roman Empire. Or
yeah.
the sure. pyramids,
yeah.
or just go see it so you have like some factual mm-hmm. data as to how the pyramids were built or how Rome got as big as it was or all this stuff, mm-hmm. right? Or, I could go back.
1924, 100,000 deer on the Kaibab would be
sounds pretty. Like, I don't know how I could pass that up. You know what I mean? Like, I would really be looking at it like, okay, Egyptians, and I'd be the only person to know how they truly and actually built the pyramids. Mm-hmm. Or yeah, I could go try to kill a giant on the Kaibab with 100,000 deer.
You might find yourself, though, with the pyramids wishing you were on the Kaibab in 1924. Be like, oh, I wonder what that looks like.
True. I don't know. That'd be a tough one. That's how much of a degenerate we are when
this
it comes
says,
to
forest
hunting.
Rangers reported that there were, quote unquote, deer everywhere.
Yeah, I'm going to Kaibab. Yeah. 1926. What did you say, 26?
24.
1924.
Says,
yeah, I'm going.
It says many people thought that the experiment was a huge success. Until the winter of 1924-25 when...
Wiped them out.
Yeah, severe starvation killed as many as 90% of the deer population.
That's a hard winter.
Yep. Yeah. Pretty wild. But it said... accounts say that the forests were completely stripped of edible vegetation, trees, shrubs. Totally overbrowsed. Completely nuked.
Wow.
Deer everywhere.
Quote is, there was deer everywhere.
It would be fun to see.
That would be fun.
Current population, they said they estimated between 20 and 30,000 deer, which is still a pretty solid, fun, huntable population. And I've been chasing that damn tag for a number of years, so.
Five times that amount, though.
Yeah, I know.
It's crazy.
That's like a tag I have been chasing in Arizona.
Yeah, I would.
It keeps point creeping me. There was a time not that long
How
ago.
How many points you got?
I want to say 13 maybe. I'm like one or two like
try
under
where, I'm at.
Where
and
I need
it keeps
to be.
Point creeping me too.
Yeah, there were a few years ago I was like, oh, I'm gonna drive the Kaibab this year, and then you know odds came out and it jumped me by a couple points. But
yeah, I'm at 13 in Arizona.
I figure at this stage in the game, I'm just gonna wait it out and eventually I'll catch it.
So at some point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I can't wait to go out there and just hunt that country because it's legendary yeah. country. I mean, everybody talks about the Kaibab.
It is absolutely legendary.
Yep.
Not to go back to the night counting buck, but I did.
No, go back.
Deep research. 161. That sounds actually pretty right.
Okay.
16. Gotcha. I could see a giant deer coming out of 16 back in the day.
Gotcha.
26 just didn't seem right to me. That's weird.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I know it's a long time ago, but
you're like,
the 26
no,
is there's no
that
way.
That can't be.
There's no way.
What? No way.
16, 161. That one, that makes more sense.
Mm-hmm. Do you think, and that's it, I mean, that's top five non-typicals, top five typicals. I don't know if people enjoyed listening to that, but I thoroughly enjoyed researching that. Like it was really fun. This was a fun project that I worked on over the weekend and then yesterday. So
the thought of the 10 kids whiffing on does.
And then the dad gets out and just lays one out.
There's so many nuggets in there. So the broader buck that, you know, they take a Model T and then hire a guy with horses and a sleigh to pull them out.
So awesome.
And, you know, he sees that, you know, spine shot, which is interesting. I mean, all of it, there's all those like little nuggets and tidbits I thought were super cool. But hopefully people enjoyed it. And then I guess I would my portion I would wrap up by just saying go watch that that film that we did, Colorado's Deer.
It's pretty cool.
It's one of my favorites. I went back and watched it, and I remember thinking like I liked it when I saw it. I liked it even better.
Yeah.
Since I've seen it,
it's an awesome story. And Brett and his friends, like,
such a cool dude.
Yeah, he's the best.
Yep. I remember meeting him, I think, at a Hunt Expo probably that first year after that came out, and just such a solid dude. Actually, I wonder if I got time, if I could find it. I probably can't, but find the article. So we did an interview 1 year after he killed it, like the anniversary. And there's some hilarious answers in there, which I absolutely loved. He must work in the oil industry, oil and gas. Yeah. He makes some comment about being redneck, and then something else about being like oil filled trash or something like this. Something, but it was just, I loved it.
He's
just
a
hardworking blue collar dude, killed a giant buck, and that whole story was super cool. As a lot of these were, but
It's crazy though. Like, it just shows you. I mean, back in the day was clearly better, right? Because you think about like Brett Ross's buck. Hmm. Then you think about like the Lopez buck out of Colorado, 316 net.
Yeah, that would have been
Kyle Lopez. That was
03, 04, something like that.
Yeah.
I want to say early 2000s.
Yeah. And it was gigantic.
Do you remember the picture of that where he's like in his sweats in the back of the truck?
Yeah,
and
he's in a hoodie
hoodie.
The back of the truck.
Yep. Yeah.
316.
Yep.
Out of Colorado.
I actually read something about that said, he skipped football practice.
I remember. He was a high school kid.
Yeah.
Even middle school. He's a young kid.
Yeah. I think he got permission to skip high school practice to go hunt deer for a day. Ended up killing that buck.
316 buck.
Do you think, do you think in our lifetime we'll see, another buck like that of that caliber? 316?
Man, I don't know.
Have we gotten too good?
I don't know.
At finding and killing animals that are,
is that what it is? Is that the difference? Is that the sole difference, do you think?
I mean,
like, I'll put it to you this way.
Mm-hmm.
There was a buck killed in Nevada. What was the, like, 2023? It's 282 or 280, I think, like high 280s.
Mm-hmm.
The governor's tag killed it here. And everyone who saw that buck in person, specifically Jeff Baird, the mm-hmm. taxidermist, because he sees a lot of deer. He understands deer. I mean, he's the one that preserves the velvet. He knows a lot about the growing cycles of deer. When they brought that into him, he said that deer was nowhere near done growing.
Was it in velvet?
Yeah.
Okay.
They shot it August 3rd or 4th, maybe, or maybe
so
even
you
1st. Could
have added,
because that's when they're allowed to hunt on that mm-hmm. tag, is August 1st.
Yep.
He said that deer was nowhere near done growing.
Jeez.
Not that it would get to that level in this year, but okay, well, if he was 280 something and he wasn't close to done growing, he had so many points and everything, let's say he was 290 something if he was fully done. Is it just one more year of age and you think he hits?
I don't know.
I don't know.
It has to be such a perfect storm of age, you know, health of the mother when it was born. Genetics.
There's so much into it.
All of it. Feed. It has to have just the old, and then just being able to avoid predation, avoid hunters, avoid mountain lions.
You go back and look at the years that the top fives were killed.
There were a bunch in the 40s, so like 40s, 42 to like 50, and there's some that are like earlier, but that 40s and 50s felt like there were a number of them.
Yeah. So what is it though? What's the difference? Like, what is the difference that it was okay, they could get to that size then, but not anymore now?
Well, I would say most people were probably opportunistic at that time, and I mean, there were more deer, obviously. We were kind of
less hunters.
We were in that boom cycle of mule deer across the West. There were just more of
them. Also when the population was like pretty down too, because baby boomers were being born in,
you mean, human population.
Yeah so like the population of hunters was lower. Deer population was higher.
Can you imagine the bucks that were probably just kicking around? like just the
well back in those days too, if it wasn't over 30, they like my dad talks about when he was a teenager hunting with his Uncle Bill.
Mm-hmm.
Like the only thing they ever cared about. Because I would ask him stories mm-hmm. about the Ponsagon. You know, I've only been able to hunt it once. And it's like he got to hunt it every year just as an open unit, and that's where he would go with his family, with his Uncle Bill. That's where the hunting comes from in my bloodline yeah. is my dad hunting with his Uncle Bill on the Ponsagon.
Mm-hmm.
It was just an open tag.
They were looking for 30 entry.
And I would ask them all the time.
With like, twins out.
Yeah. So whenever we bullshit at hunt camp or looking at a deer or whatever, I always ask him. He's like, I wish I knew now,
mm-hmm.
like back then, because I feel like I saw so many big deer now that I know what makes a big deer and not just width.
Yeah.
Because all that mattered was 4 inches outside the ears on both sides. Mm-hmm. That's all that mattered.
Yeah. It'd be fun, man, if there's a time machine ever invented. I would love to go back and see what the 40s and 50s, 60s were like for mule deer hunting.
Where would you go? Kaibab?
Oh, man. I'd jump in my International Scout. And I would
just start driving around.
I would roll so hard. I don't know if I'm mad enough to survive back then. Those guys were hardy people.
Like hardy.
Yeah. I mean, the guy that shot it with one arm, with his 10 boys,
pretty,
16 kids total.
Pretty wild.
Hardy people.
Yeah, for sure. That was a different
breed, different yeah. time.
Now well, look cool. at us. We get cold sitting inside.
Yeah, thank God that he turned the AC on. Huh?
I know. We get hot sitting inside, I should say.
Omar! Yeah. Well, good, man. Thanks for humoring me. That was fun. I learned a lot.
That was an enjoyable. Actually, I learned a lot, too. Yeah. I knew a little bit about some of those bucks, but not like those deep stories.
It's fun to do a little deep dive.
It's cool that those bucks are famous, though, too. You know?
Oh, it's fun, man. The allure of it.
They have stories to them.
I know, and I need to go to the museum.
Yeah.
I'd love to check that out. Antlers are so fascinating.
They're awesome.
They're the coolest. But anyway, we'll be back next week. We'll do another one, and then, like I said, I'm looking forward to the old Halloween episode.
Hopefully I shoot some more ducks between now and then.
What would you do if you're out in the woods and you're just out there by yourself, completely didn't know, and then all of a sudden, randomly, you just hear someone screaming for help, but you can't quite make it out? You don't know if they're screaming for help.
Are you alluding to a story? Because I don't like this story already.
I might be.
I don't like that story.
Me either. Creep me out. And there's not just one. I've read multiple like that.
I don't like that.
Me either. Anyway, that's a little titillating story. A little leader.
I don't like thinking about that. Because if I was ever in that situation, I don't know if I would like, would I would probably go the other way. But they are yelling for help.
Yeah. Yeah.
That would be dark. Was it dark when that happened?
Oh, yeah. Nighttime.
Yeah. I don't like that.
Nobody else for help during the daytime. Only in the middle of the night when you're in deep sleep do you hear the faint moanings. Help.
Oh, I don't like it.
Anyway, look forward to that one.
Great. All right. Let's see you.